It is my pleasure to introduce to you Dan Clark, President and CEO of Clark's Success Systems, a New York Times best-selling author of 21 books and a primary contributing author to the Chicken Soup for the Soul series. As a young man, Clark aimed to become a professional athlete. He was a scholarship football and baseball player at the University of Utah and slated to be a first-round draft pick in the NFL when he suffered a career-ending injury during a tackling drill. Doctors predicted a 10% chance of recovery. However, Clark beat the odds, fully recovered, and was invited to speak about his recovery, thus beginning his motivational speaking career under the well-known tutorage of Zig Ziglar. His topic, leadership, the art of significance.
Oh, I thought you were leaving. I was going to say, thanks for coming. I'm excited to be here. I'm sorry? Did they not? That's kind of a tragedy. He said, I hope they had chicken soup for lunch. Yeah. I'm excited to be here. I am not a right-to-life speaker. I am a professional speaker who happens to be an advocate of right-to-life. And that's my message today. Life is a story, and we all need to leave here prepared and committed to writing a different story, a better story, adding to the story that we already have in motion. Understanding that from a movie perspective, we're the writers, we're the directors, we're the producers of our own movie. And if you don't really like where it's going right now, you have the capacity, I have the capacity to change it. I love to ask questions. You cannot not answer a question. If you understand the significance of time, maybe you can answer these three questions to put my time with you in perspective. Today, you've never been this old before. She's pointing at her, yeah. And today, you'll never be this young again. So right now matters. Do you agree that no matter what your past has been, you have a spotless future? Do you really understand that you can't always control what happens, but you can always control what happens next? So what are you going to do about it? This magnificent packet that was put together by Mike Minocchio, who's been kind of called the choreographer of this convention, this conference, this meeting. In that packet that you've all received, there's a blue card, and it basically asks you the question, what are you going to commit to once you leave here? So I don't know how many of you had a chance to listen to John Smeaton this morning as he spoke with his Eastern Cleveland accent. I know that's why Molly brought him in, so that she could finally understand someone when they talked. And he so eloquently put different organizations, different individuals in their place from his perspective, and educated us on the significance of one voice, of one person taking the stage and provocatively challenging the status quo. Would you be willing to do something like he did? I don't know if I would. And yet he takes that calling seriously, and one person in himself is making this giant difference. Could that giant difference be made by you? I'm one person, and I allow that video to be shown. I hate sitting in the audience when it's shown. I feel like I'm at my own funeral. But there's a couple of video clips in there that I want to refer to that make more sense because you actually had a chance to see. One of the things that I really want you to understand is that I'm just a regular Joe who believes in this cause wholeheartedly. And let me just share some stories as a storyteller. Our oldest daughter, Nicola, the beautiful curly-headed girl in that picture at the very end of the intro video, she was Miss Teen Utah, this beauty queen, smart, won all these scholarships. She currently is a special education teacher at a middle school for the severely challenged. And going into her third year as a middle school educator, she usually has about 15 students, nine of whom have Down syndrome, and five or six who have autism. A few years ago, I was the keynote speaker at the National Rehabilitation Association convention when they passed the Disabilities Act to make all buildings accessible, or require for all buildings to be accessible to the disabled. And as I had my conference call, They educated me on the significance of putting the emphasis on the person and not the disability. How many of us flippantly say, oh, the blind guy did this, or the crippled girl did that, and they so significantly educated me to always and forevermore refer to this person who happens to be blind, this gentleman who happens to have this disability, to put the emphasis on the person, not the performance or lack thereof. And if that's not a bottom line grassroots message for the right to life, I don't know what is, because regardless of where you get your statistics from, I know that the statistics are anywhere from 70 to 90% of women who receive their ultrasound, and when they find out that they're going to give birth to a child with a disability, something like Down syndrome, they elect and choose to terminate that pregnancy. And because I'm the primary contributor and author to all the Chicken Soup for the Soul books with hundreds of stories, one of the great highlights of my life is when my daughter invites me into her class to read some stories from Chicken Soup. And to realize that these 15 children, ages 12 to 15 years of age, are celestial beings. And the joy and the love that they bring into our lives. To have someone become so selfish, thinking that there's never a way in my life, it's all about me, that I would ever want to put that much time and effort into raising somebody with a mental challenge or a disability, it's beyond me. A couple of years ago, I was the keynote speaker at the NISH conference. NISH, an acronym for National Institute for the Severely Handicapped. And at that national convention, they went out of their way as a board to change the title of that organization. And because of tax purposes, they had to keep NISH, N-I-S-H, but no longer did they explain what that acronym meant, because we never called them the severely handicapped. Well, one of my dearest friends, he started a business at age 24 in college. 10 years later, at age 34, he sells his business for $1.4 billion. Builds his dream house, 25,000 square feet, buys his Citation private jet, and spends $333,000 a year on jet fuel. And he's living the life. 3 years later, his second son, his second child, is born and diagnosed with autism. And most people would say in his circle of influence, oh, I bet your life just crashed down. No longer can you live the high life. And I called him right before my speech to the National NISH Conference in Philadelphia. I said, David, this is who I'm speaking to in about 30 minutes. What do you think I should tell him? And he says, you tell them that he wishes every single human being on this planet could have a child with autism. Let's talk, going full circle. Do you believe that one moment in time can change forever? Do you really believe that we can leave this magnificent Embassy Suites Hotel in Cleveland, Ohio? I just flew in from Hawaii. I had on a white polo shirt when I walked outside of the door in the airport. I took a deep breath and my nostrils stuck together. We are here to change ourselves. Do you believe we can leave here because one moment in time changes everything? I know it's a fact proof. I'm on the program with Henry Winkler, the Fonzie from Happy Days. Tragedies, some of you in this room are so young, you don't even know who I'm talking about. He is the coolest guy who ever lived. Started in a 1970s TV sitcom called Happy Days. He and I are on the program together. After our speeches, he decides he wants to treat himself to a matinee movie, so he slides in through the side exit door of the theater. And as Henry Winkler shuffles himself through the aisle, he finds himself a vacant seat. As Henry Winkler turns to sit down in the chair to look up at the movie screen, the little girl sitting right behind him smiles this giant smile. She points her finger and she slowly says, Fonzie. Henry Winkler immediately snaps into the Fonzie character from Happy Days. Hey, whoa. And the lady sitting next to the little girl passes out. Henry Winkler milks the moment. Whoa, I thought this only happened on TV drama. Hey, how cool is this? Whoa. Theater manager comes out, takes care of the woman's needs. She's lying in the aisle, cold pack on her forehead. She's asked one question: why did you pass out? She said, my little girl is autistic. And that is the very first word she has ever spoken in her entire life. Why are you here? What will you do with this light blue card? What will your commitment be when you leave here? And as a speaker, my challenge is for us to not just practice what we preach. We must preach only what we practice. And to remind me, in our hectic world, I wear this bracelet. I've had an opportunity to entertain and fire up our military troops all over the world. For many, many years, it's how I serve my country. I was first invited at the height of the Iraqi conflict in 2005. And I was invited over to the AOR, as they call it, the Area of Responsibility, the first speaker ever to be invited to speak to our troops in a combat zone. For 16 days, I was in Afghanistan, all over Iraq, stayed in Saddam's palace, spoke in his grand ballroom, stole the key from his guest house so I could have something on my wall. Kuwait, United Arab Emirates, Bahrain, Qatar. 16 days, I spoke 23 times on 12 bases and out on the USS Harry S. Truman aircraft carrier to over 30,000 of our bravest men and women. It changed my life forever. And in Bagram, Afghanistan, an Army Ranger member of the 82nd Airborne, we connected. He came up after, and a couple hours later, he returns to my quarters, and he gives me this bracelet made out of his parachute cord that he had made. It has a jump medal, has a little miniature American flag, and it has a combat insignia. We came in contact with the enemy. Another time, I could share some stories. I've never taken it off. It's made out of his parachute cord, so it dries instantaneously. When I shower, it dries. I still love to surf. Been in Hawaii 4 days. Yeah, I get out of the ocean, it immediately dries. It's perfect. And on a daily, hourly, minute-by-minute basis, it reminds me it's not enough for us to just practice what we preach. We must preach only what we practice. In the Bible, James 1 and 5 says, if any of you lack wisdom, let him ask of God. It didn't say if any of you lack information, if any of you lack knowledge. It says if any of you lack wisdom, and the dictionary definition of wisdom is applied knowledge. Knowledge is power, but knowledge has no heart. All the information in the world is going to make a person successful. It's like the guy who has 3 PhDs, one in philosophy, one in psychology, one in sociology. He doesn't have a job, but at least he can explain why. We don't learn to know, we learn to do. We've got to figure out a way to understand. Reason leads to conclusions, but it is emotion that leads to action. Reason leads to conclusions, but it is emotion that leads to action. So I wear this bracelet to remind me that as a public figure, which all of us are, especially when we're standing up for the right to life. A few minutes ago, the adversary shows up at the hotel lobby with their little signs jumping around. We're going to attract adversarial people and philosophies every single time we stand up for what's right. Because at the end of the day, it's never who's right. It's always about what's right. And what's right is always right, regardless of who says it. So, as public figures taking a stand, it's not enough for us to just buy one of those little bows that says support the troops and put it on our vehicle as a magnet and feel like we're doing our civic duty. Are you kidding me? So I decided long ago that I better take my level of commitment to a higher level. So every single time I see an airman, a sailor, a marine, a soldier in an airport, I buy him or her a meal. What a drag. No one ever told me they don't hang out all by themselves. They're always in groups of 3, 5. When they find out it's free food, I hear a whistle in the men's room. 9 guys running out the door in formation. Hey, hey, free Nathan's dogs, D5. But because winning isn't a sometime thing, it's an all-the-time thing, it's easy for us to be all positive and chirpy and confident in our group here and sequestered in this hotel away from the world. What's going to happen when we leave here? So it's not enough for us to just be that way in certain situations. Winning isn't a sometime thing, it's an all the time thing. So I thought, I better take the same level of commitment aboard the planes because that's where I spend so much of my time. I'm fortunate enough to fly first class. It's good for a big guy. Delta Airlines takes good care of me. I always get a window seat. I've written most of my books on the road, most of my songs on the road. I get a window seat. No one bothers me. I don't bother them. So I board the plane. I'm sitting in my window seat, first class. They've served the beverages. The rest of the passengers start coming aboard the plane, and you've all seen it as I have. There's always at least one passenger dragging that 411-pound carry-on bag down the aisle. And if you look closely, there's usually two air holes drilled in the top because Aunt Shirley's inside. They refuse to splurge for an extra ticket. Quit moving. We're going to get arrested. They're dragging her down the aisle. It takes them 45 minutes to put her up in the overhead space. So now there's congestion and all the passengers are backed up. I'm sitting in my window seat, first class. I look left and stopped in the aisle on my row is a soldier in full uniform. So I chat him up. How you doing? I'm fine, sir. I said, are you coming or going? He says, I'm just coming back from the desert, sir. They're always so polite. I said, where have you been? He says, I've been in Baghdad for 15 months, sir. I said, I bet you're excited to see your family. He gets emotional. He says, yeah, I sure hope they're excited to see me. I said, guaranteed, bro. Welcome home. I said, I want to swap seats. No, 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 sir. That's not necessary. I said, what do you mean it's not necessary? It's the least I can do. The flight attendant overhears me. Mr. Clark, that's so nice of you. I said, it's not so nice of me. It's the least I can do. I said, you sit in my seat. You give him anything he wants. You take good care of him. You give me your seat assignment. I'm going to the back of the plane to sit in your seat. I go to the back of the plane. I'm looking for a seat. Wouldn't you know it? He's sitting in a center seat between two chubby guys. Now, I've lost 41 pounds since I got to playing football, but I'm still 6'5", weigh about 235, 240. I show up. These two guys are looking up at me like, oh, no. I'm looking back at them like, double no. Excuse me. Excuse me. I sit down. Oh, no. Let me interrupt. That's what's going to happen the second this conference is over. Like I said, it's so easy for us to be positive and chipper and speak our peace while we're amongst one another. But once we leave here, we'll realize the weather hasn't changed. We'll realize our relationships haven't changed and the legislation hasn't changed. And so some of us are going to go, wow, this is wonderful. Whoa, what a drag. Was this conference really worth my time and money? And when we're stuck, we're all human. We default to the path of least resistance. So we start thinking victim mentality again, don't we? Oh, I'm so old, I bend over to pull up my socks, and I think, what else can I accomplish while I'm way down here? You start remembering the nights you go to bed healthy and you wake up injured. Is that starting to happen to some of you? We go to bed healthy, we wake up injured, and all we did was lay there. You wake up, your hips asleep, your foot hurts, you're like, hey, 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 what's going on around here? I'm starting to stretch out in case something happens at 2 a.m., Gordon Douglas, funny guy, perfect hair. His hair has not moved since 1977. And I'm intimidated by him because I'm losing hair right here and I'm growing it in places I don't even need it. That's not a fair trade-off. My only hope is that the hair of my right ear will grow long enough I can comb it up over the top of my head and fake all of you out. Are we not all guilty? Default, woe me, what a drag, you don't understand. What allowed me to sit up and stop looking and treating these human beings as objects in my way and start treating them as fellow human beings, same God who made you, made me too, was the memory of being downtown Baghdad when it was 140 degrees Fahrenheit. I just got back from another 18-day military tribute tour, July 8th through July 25th. It was 131 degrees in Kuwait, and we were all along the Iraqi border. My buddy and his wife just returned from Kyrgyzstan. They lived in Erbil when ISIS was only 7 miles from outside the city when they overtook Mosul. I was there. I know exactly what's happened. And my buddy and his wife single-handedly handed out 94,000 parkas on a humanitarian mission. One person can make a difference. Can you? Absolutely. Absolutely. So I sit up and I'm remembering being downtown Baghdad when it's 140 degrees Fahrenheit. And on top of that, our soldiers, our Marines, our airmen, our sailors, are wearing 85 pounds to 125 pounds of combat gear, running towards the sound of the guns, with the bad guys trying to pick them off to keep them from coming home safely to America, while we're at the mall, while we're at this conference talking about very important issues, but safe and sound. And then I realize there's justice in the universe when we stand up for what's right, when we do more than is expected, when we understand service before self is what it's really all about. Or in Ed's famous words, doing something eternal with eternal consequences. As I'm sitting there finally feeling better about my decision, about 4 minutes later, the guy who was sitting next to me in first class comes wandering to the back of the plane. We get eye contact. I said, "What's up?" He said, "You made us all feel guilty." I said, "What happened?" He said, "The next soldier got on board the plane, I gave him my seat." I said, "Cool, man, let me help you find yours." And wouldn't you know it, he's sitting in the row right in front of me in the center seat between two chubbier guys. He's so stuck, he can't even turn around and keep complaining. And by the time we took off, there were four guys who had been sitting in first class who are now in the back of the plane where we should have been all along to pay tribute to these American soldiers, willing to give it all if necessary so we can gather in Cleveland, Ohio, and strengthen one another so when we leave here, we know the significance and power of one voice about the right thing. And that story does not end there. That night I went to bed in my hotel, checked in. I went to bed and got a great night's sleep. You know what I'm talking about. Wow. Service before self. I wake up the next morning. I go into the giant ballroom, 5,000 folks at a national convention. And wouldn't you know it, the guy who introduces me is the guy who was sitting next to me in first class, CEO of the company. We hadn't had a chance to get acquainted. He makes the introduction very, very personal because he said four of us in first class inspired one another to give what we could at that moment in time to pay tribute to these American fighting soldiers who allow us to be here today. What's the moral of the story? People are watching. People are watching you. So we've got to figure out why we do what we do so that when the heat is on, we can survive. In fact, more than survive, thrive. May I share a personal story that links me to why I'm here? I played football for 13 years total. One day in practice, the dream ended. We had a tackling drill. Coach blew the whistle. Two of us ran into each other full speed. Only parts of our bodies that made contact, Lyle's helmet in a 15-yard apart tackling drill. Lyle's helmet crashed into my helmet. My right shoulder was smashed into the cutting edge of my fiberglass pads, and we slammed to the ground. And when Lyle got off of me, I had compressed my 7 cervical vertebrae in my neck. I'd severed the axillary nerve in my right deltoid muscle, and I'd suffered a level 2 concussion, which simply meant I shook like a leaf. I perspired. I threw up all night long and cried myself to sleep. Let's talk. I stayed paralyzed for 14 months. I went to 16 of the very best doctors in all of North America, and every one of them told me I would never get any better. And have you ever heard that? What happens if you believe it? Never get any better. And you know what? I hit rock bottom and didn't think I could get up and go again. And then I discovered something about the significance of my message here today. I had friends and family come up to me and say, "I know what you're going through," trying to make me feel better. And the reality is, no, they didn't. Psychologists remind us that the average person talks between 100 and 200 words a minute. And yet we think between 200 and 400 words a minute, which means no one ever knows everything that we think. No one ever knows everything that we feel. No one ever knows everything that we want to say. The author Thoreau was right when he said, "Men lead lives of quiet desperation." Well, as an athlete, I knew you can't quit. It's a league rule. But I found myself alone. Because this is a faith-based meeting, and I just feel so comfortable being around you, may I just remind us all that you don't know what I'm going through, and you don't know what I'm going through. But the Lord and Savior Jesus Christ does. We're never alone. Can do all things through Christ who strengtheneth me. And when we're open to that personal revelation of what do we do next, can't always control what happens, but we can always control what happens next. Suddenly we understand that it's a joint venture between me and heaven, where I pray to Almighty God as if everything depends on Him, and then work as though everything depends on me. What are you going to do next? What are you going to do next? I stayed paralyzed for 14 months. Now that I've recovered, I'm asked the oddest question. Clark, what took you so long? And because I'm asked that question, I think I have the right to ask every audience. So if you're really going to change, what are you waiting on? We have these young, beautiful students in this room, young men and young women. Any of you a sophomore in high school? Raise your hand. What's your name? Maggie. Do you like being a sophomore? You had to think about it. You know what? You should always say yes. You know why? You have no other choice. You better be the best sophomore you can be because you ain't no junior yet. Any juniors here? Any juniors in high school here? Yeah. What's your name? Joseph. Do you like being a junior? See? Oh, that was funny. He goes, yeah. That's true. Midlife crisis. I don't know. I'm a junior. I'm right in the middle of everything. I don't know. Any seniors in high school? Yeah. You like being a senior? She said, I'm so tired of the children. I can't wait till I graduate. What's my point? I teach public speaking at a MBA program at university. I have done so for 8 years. It's forced me to crystallize what I know about public speaking. My last lecture, my final exam is the last lecture. If you had 1 hour to live, what would you say? This young girl in my class, buffed. Her job, helping her pay for her college education, is to ride shotgun in an EMT in an ambulance. So she's physically fit, she's buff, she's beautiful, she's smart, she's talented. How does she start her final, her last lecture, her final examination speech? To her peers, she says, have any of you ever seen anybody die? And she says, I have. She was a first responder to a young 17-year-old kid who hit a tree going way too fast on his motorcycle with no helmet. And when she got there, he died in her arms. And she explains the story. And then she pauses and looks at the audience again. And she says, did his life matter? He was 17 years of age. Did he really make a difference, or did he die with his music still in him? And yet so many of us who are now old like me are still in that same mindset. Someday I'm going to make my move. When I finally do this, then I'm going to make my move. When I finally get here, then I'm going to be somebody. I'm going to fulfill my calling. What about right now? Because we can't always control what happens, but we can always control what happens next. I stayed paralyzed for 14 months because I was asking the wrong questions. I was asking the doctors how to get better when I should have been asking myself why. And once we answer why, figuring out the how-to is pretty simple. So why are you here? Why? Why? Hopefully it's to increase an understanding. One of my stories was made into a film at Paramount Studios starring the late Jack Lemmon. I share that because I wrote this story when I was 13 years of age. And I was the kid in middle school, junior high, who could make people laugh, but I could no more stand up in front of a room and give a speech than I couldn't do that. But a teacher saw something in me that I didn't see in myself, and she says, Danny, I think you ought to write a story and enter into the speech essay competition. So I did. Won the speech essay competition. We put it on a holiday greeting card as a family. It became a family heirloom. I put it in my very first book that I published back in the day. And it appeared in the first volume of our Chicken Soup for the Soul series. Took it to Jack Lemmon. He decided he wanted to have his name and his reputation attached to the message. Because unbeknownst to us, the last two projects that he participated in before he died of his terminal illness, Tuesdays with Maury, a television drama that touched our lives, and My Little Movie Puppies for Sale. The story is simple because it proves true that the answers are in the box. One of our ways of answering why we do anything, why should we, is because we have taken the time to back off and understand what it's really gonna do. Why does it matter? How can it contribute to the benefit of humanity? Story is simple. A store owner was tacking a nail in the side above his store door, which read, Puppies for Sale. Signs like that have a way of attracting small children, and sure enough, a little boy appears at the store owner's side. Instead of me finishing the story, I thought it'd be fun for you to watch a two-minute clip. Please pay particular attention to Jack Lemmon's eyes, because he validates once and for all that one person in one moment in time can change everything if we just simply connect heart to heart, spirit to spirit, let go, let God, and take time to understand. If I can ask you to look at the screen.
Well, hey there, old-timer. What can I do for you?
How much are you selling the puppies for?
The puppies? We're selling the puppies at anywhere from $25 to $50.
I have $10.37. Uh-huh. Can I please look at them?
You want to look at them? Well, sure. Chloe, bring out the brood.
What's wrong with that little puppy?
That little puppy, the vet said he was born without a hip socket. That means he's always going to be slow and he's always going to have a limp.
That's the puppy you want to buy.
What?
That's the puppy I want to buy.
Well, you don't want to buy that puppy. That's... Look, well, if you really want that puppy, then I'll give him to you.
I don't want you to give him to me. That little puppy right there is worth every little bit as much as all the other puppies in here. Don't pay full price. I can give you $10.37 now and pay $2 a month until I haven't paid for.
Yeah, but you still don't want to buy that puppy. It's never going to be able to run and jump and play with you like the other puppies.
Well, I don't run so well myself, and the little puppy will need the one who understands and cares for him.
Son, the puppy's yours. $2 a month is fine.
Thanks. So the question is, understand what? What are you going to do about what you know? What are you going to do about this conference? What are you going to do? What are you going to do next to make a difference so that your life matters as a sophomore in high school or as an old man like me? What it boils down to is our commitment to raising our bar. I'm paid big bucks to work with the teams in the National Football League. I'm a fan of the Cleveland Browns. Someday they're going to win. And I love this place. What they've, you know, the resurrection of the restaurants and the hotels downtown and the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I'm a gold record songwriter. And you are the most intelligent sports fans on the planet. You deserve a championship. I don't know what's going wrong. A few years ago, your pro baseball team, the Indians, only needed to win one more game to go to the World Series. They lost three in a row. I saw a new bumper sticker, downtown Cleveland, go Browns and take the Indians with you. Paid big bucks to work with most of the teams in the National Football League. To go into their team meeting and say something that will inspire them to take themselves to the next level. Think about it. It's more than semantics. I said to inspire them to take themselves to the next level. I don't want to be a motivational speaker. I hate these guys. They say the stupidest things. They show up and say things like, we become what we think about. That's not true. If that was true, I would have been a woman by the time I was 12 years old. I want to be an inspirational speaker. Because in that word inspiration, it seems to indicate that the message will outlast the meeting. Duh. So walk with me into this NFL team meeting. What would you say to these folks? In every single NFL team meeting, there are 53 elite athletes who collectively represent over $105 million in annual salary. That's sick. The good news is what motivates them is the same thing that motivates you and me. Can you motivate them with money? No, and most of us will say no, because they have all they need. No, 78% of NFL players are flat bankrupt within 3 years after retirement. Allen Iverson made $150 million playing pro basketball, and right now he's homeless. He doesn't own two quarters. Antoine Walker made $110 million playing pro basketball, flat bankrupt and broke. I have friends who make millions of dollars a year. They just have more debt and crazier toys. Money is not a motivator. You can't take it with you. Can you motivate them with benefits and bonuses? Do you realize how many people in America are refusing to let go of their job because they're afraid they're going to lose their benefits and bonuses? Just work a little harder and make more money and pay for your own insurance. We've got to figure out a way to take a stand. Too many people are bringing their dreams down to the level of their income when we've got to figure out a way to bring our income up to the level of our dreams so we can raise our bar and make a difference, make a donation, support the causes that matter. Can you motivate them with awards and rewards? No, and that doesn't motivate us either. If you can't motivate anybody with money, with benefits and bonuses or awards and rewards, the only thing that motivates them is what motivates us, expectations. So here's the object lesson that works famously at every level, in every corporation, in every organization, especially for professional athletes. In this team meeting, I ask a captain of the team and an assistant coach to hold a broomstick 12 inches off the floor. And ahead of time, I get the name of the most gifted, talented athlete on the entire squad who can jump 38 inches high. And for the record, every single one of the 32 NFL teams has at least one player on their roster who can jump 38 inches high. Do you know how high this is? Without getting any running start, no inertia, they just stand there and go, eat a Big Mac, drink a Diet Coke before they land. You're like, whoa, dude. Think about who in the league seems to be a freak of nature who can jump 38 inches high. Any Green Bay Packers fans? Julius Peppers. He's bigger than me. Jumps 38 inches high. A.J. Watts, Texans. He's bigger than me. 6'6", about 290. He jumps 38 inches high. Tim Tebow, my size. The highest paid fourth string quarterback in the history of the NFL can jump 38 inches high. And this prima donna is always sitting in the back of the team meeting, so I call him out by name, and sure enough, it takes him 22 and a half minutes to walk to the front of the room. Passes by a rookie. Did he sit on something hot? No, he's just cool that way. Wow, sat on something hot. So now visualize the scenario. Captain of the team, assistant coach, holding a broomstick 12 inches off the floor. Superstar is now in front of the room, and so I engage him in conversation. Hey, do you think you can jump over that 12-inch high broomstick? His reaction is always the same. Why are you wasting my time? Are you stupid? So I changed the question. Will you jump over that 12-inch high broomstick? And the response is always the same. They pacify me, skip over the bar, stare me down. So I stare back, and here's where the teaching begins. Why did you only jump 12 inches high when you and your teammates know you can jump 38 inches high? And the answer is always the same, because that's all you asked me to do. How high is your bar? And everyone with whom you live, work, play, practice, and worship knows exactly how high your bar is because they see it every single day. Only you know how high it should be. Only you know if you are stretching yourself and pushing yourself to your ultimate capacity and potential as a human being, physically, mentally, spiritually, socially, and financially. Service before self. And what happens when we push ourselves and we actually put ourselves in a position to make a difference? How many of you had a chance to hear Reggie Littlejohn speak about her involvement in China? It ripped my heart out, but it reminded me of a wonderful experience. One of the boards I sit on is called the International Board of Governors of Operation Smile. We do the cleft lip, cleft palate surgeries all over the world. 25-year anniversary coming up. We're at our L.A. gala. Our board of directors is a who's who. I don't need to drop any names, but just for the record, Mark Brunette, if any of you watch The Apprentice or The Survivor Series or The Voice, he's Mr. Reality TV. His wife, Roma Downey, is on our board, and she starred in Touched by an Angel for 9 seasons of television program. Such a great Christian woman. She's on our board. The list goes on and on. And we're at our L.A. gala, star-studded, celebrities everywhere. Billy Bush is usually our MC. Sometimes I'm our MC. And I'm sitting at the front table, and on this side of me is one of our board members, and her name is Wallace Annenberg. Her family, if you visit the UCLA campus, several buildings are named after her parents and grandparents, very philanthropic family, one of the largest, wealthiest, privately held foundations in the country. And on this side is another board member, Jerry Moyes. He's the founder and CEO president of Swift Trucking, the largest trucking company in the country, over 16,000 trailers. And the three of us are sitting there. It's a black tie affair. And all of a sudden, in a tactful, politically correct way, if you can't even be that way, Billy Bush starts describing some of the calamities and some of the challenges around the world in different countries where we are now going with our missions and our volunteer plastic surgeries. For $240 and a 45-minute surgery, you can give this little girl who has a giant hole in her face a smile and a life. She's never kissed her mother goodbye. She's never kissed her mother goodnight. She's ostracized by her friends. In some cultures, they think she's possessed by the devil. They don't let anybody play with her. She can't get any employment as she grows older. She's a prisoner in her own body. And for 45 minutes and $240, you give her a smile that changes her family, that changes her environment, it changes her reputation, it changes her village. And that night, I'll never forget it. And I haven't thought about it for a long time until Miss Little John started speaking and showing us statistics and slides about her amazing mission to save the young girls in China. Do you realize there are 75,000 female babies born every year in China with a cleft lip and cleft palate? And because of their one-child mandate, and it's an agrarian society, they still dream about having that young son who can grow up and be a strong farmer. And so if there's any kind of a disability at all, they just let them die, especially when you're a little girl, and especially when you're born with some sort of a physical disability or a birth defect. 75,000 female babies were born in one single year in China with a cleft lip, cleft palate that can be repaired for 45 minutes for $240. And yet they're left to die. And they all did. And Wallace Annenberg, she leans across me and she says to myself and Jerry Moyes, "You guys have your phones with you with a calculator?" Said, "Yeah." She says, "How much is it going to cost me to save 75,000 female babies this year?" In about 30 seconds, we figured it out on our calculators, and she wrote a check and presented it to the MC that night, which incidentally probably allowed her to have a really good night's sleep that night as well. What are we willing to do when we don't have that kind of wherewithal with the wealth and family fortune? Well, do what you can. I gave up my seat. That didn't take anything. We've got to do what we can with what we have when we can, and that's always right now. So as I wind down our time together, and I know I wanted to leave a couple of minutes for some questions, if any of you have any. I'm a storyteller. I don't know if I can even answer questions. But I have so many things going through my mind, and I know I've got to conclude at some point. And I should, you know, conclude by lip-syncing 3 Ashley Simpson songs so you'll never be the same. But something tells me I should leave a little bit more of a meaningful message. And let me just ask you a question, because you cannot not answer a question, and then hopefully answer that question with some sort of an inspirational challenge for you to fire up, as we all must when we leave here. The question is, what are you willing to do that no one else is willing to do, that makes you stand out in this crowd? I don't know if any of you have been to the Kentucky Derby or the Kentucky Oaks or the fillies race on Friday. To get into any one of those championship races, you also have to be a champion thoroughbred. But at the end of those 2 days, still only one wins the roses. There can be a champion among champions. I slide in for a little breakfast, and I'm just sitting there, and Leo Waite, just wave, my friend, right here, brother. He comes up and politely says, do you mind if we just sit in this table to join you and his two beautiful adopted nieces, Nadine and Ruth, 17-year-old twins, come and join him. And I see their name tags, and I really am kind of recluse and shy. I didn't really strike up a conversation until I saw Nadine's name tag that says she was going to compete as an oratory speaker or something at this conference. And so I was curious because I'm a speaker. So I asked him. And in a nutshell, her mother abandoned, the twins' mother abandoned them 3 years ago and just moved away to Puerto Rico and left them at school with no place to go. And Uncle Leo takes them into his home. And they're the finest, most beautiful, talented young ladies that I've had a chance to talk to a little bit at this conference. And that makes Leo an angel doing what he can do when he can do it. What are you willing to do that no one else is willing to do? Here's my explanation, and I want to bring my family into it because nothing matters except family. If families aren't forever, then what's forever for? One of the most significant things that's ever happened to me is on October 23rd, 2010, I had a chance to go up to the edge of space in a U-2 reconnaissance plane. And I didn't pay my $250,000 to Sir Richard Branson and hop in Galactica and escape the Earth's gravitational pull and soar through the air like a rock for 15 seconds and land and not have a story to tell. My sortie lasted 4 hours, and because it's a classified mission, I can only tell you that at 70,000 feet, you can see 2/3 of the state of California. At 80,000 feet, you see mapped outlines of America, and at 90,000 feet, you tear up and you actually feel like you can reach out and touch the face of God. It's a spiritual experience I wish every one of you could experience. For 4 hours, I sat in the sounds of silence, looking at the curvature of the earth, gazing into the blackness of space, pondering eternity and where I fit into all these billions of souls. Does my life matter? How do I make a difference? And when we landed, you know what occurred to me? Everything we can take with us when we die, I had a board with me on that aircraft. Our education, I don't believe we lose our memory in the life to come. Our character, adversity introduces us to ourselves. Clearly, one of the best things that's ever happened to me in my life was my football paralysis because I wouldn't have met you. Don't misunderstand me. My accident wasn't one of the best things that happened to me, but who I became as a man and what I learned about perspective and making things matter that changed me forever is clearly one of the best things that ever happened to me. We can take our convictions with us. What do you believe and why do you believe it? But maybe more significantly, did your life matter? Did my life matter? Will I have made a difference and left the world in a better place than I found it? And again, Ed, he told me to remember his name by Sitter, so now I want to call him Ed Sitter, and that's not your last name. What's your last name, Bitter? No, Sitter. Oh, thanks. Yeah, there you go. Some of you are like, he's a dumb football player. His cholesterol counts higher than his SAT scores. But no, I'm a genius. Yeah, I said, why do you do this? And he said, because I need to involve myself in something that has eternal consequences. Interesting. Let me tell you about my family. My dad, the greatest man who ever lived. One of the best songs I ever wrote, used to get a lot of radio play, it was called Special Man. Lyrical hook, any male can be a father, but it takes a special man to be a dad. Hopefully you've heard my song, and that's my dad. My dad was a cotton farmer in the east side of Phoenix, Arizona. He became very, very successful in the early 1960s. He started his own insurance company, his own financial corporation, became very, very successful. Never an athlete, dark hair, dark eyes. My mom, the greatest mom who ever lived, youngest of 9 children raised by a single mom. Anybody here raised by a single mom? We love you. We love them. Anybody here a single mom? We love you. We honor you. My mom is 87 years of age. She came to hear me speak the other day. She's never been in my audience for a long time. She's on the front row. I introduced her to the audience. They were all so gracious. They're like, wow. And I said, my mom at 87 still inspires me to this day. She inspires everyone. The other day she goes to the doctor. He says, Ruby, you need more exercise. So she signed up for an aerobics class for seniors. And sure enough, she bent over, jumped up and down, twisted and turned, perspired for over an hour. But by the time she got her leotard on, the class was over. And my mom's on the front row. That's not true. That's not funny. I love my mom. Never an athlete. Dark hair, dark eyes. My older brother, Sam, 7 degrees from major universities. That's sick. Valedictorian of his 7 universities, valedictorian of his high school. He was valedictorian of the blooming nursery in the hospital. And I was not on the honor roll every time. One time I came home with a report card, had 4 F's and 1 D on it. My dad's response, son, looks to me like you're spending too much time on one subject. I love my dad. He gets me. Older brother, never an athlete, dark hair, dark eyes. Older sister, Deborah, graduated from the university in fashion, merchandise, and design, so she sells real estate. Great success story. Never an athlete, dark hair, dark eyes. Younger brother, Paul, MBA, Harvard graduate. Lives with this beautiful family in San Francisco Bay Area. Hugely successful investment banker, never an athlete, dark hair, dark eyes. And then there's me. The only athlete, 6'5", blonde, blue eyes. Can you see my parents in a social setting? So what does your son Dan do? Oh, he talks. We are so proud. We don't need a title to make a difference. We just got to go for it, my friends. We're all in the same boat. My dad battled cancer for 6.5 years, and for some reason I wanted to be by his bedside, and that didn't happen for me. I was up in Seattle, Washington. I was in town for 2 days to make 2 speeches to 2 large trade associations downtown at the convention center. And I'm staying out of town at the Seattle Airport Marriott Hotel. It's Friday morning, October 12th. I've showered, I've shaved, put on my coat, put on my tie. I'm ready for the day. Phone rings. I think it's my ride downtown to the convention center. So I pick up the phone and I almost flippantly say, I'll be right there. But for some odd reason, I just stood there. About 15 seconds of silence later, my younger brother's voice pierces the quietness of the call. Danny? I said, hey, what's up, Paul? He said, Dad died this morning at 7 a.m. I said, whoa. I sat down on the edge of my bed, and the tears just started to fall. Let me interrupt. I'd give anything to have my dad back one more day. It's too late, and I have regrets. I don't wish regrets on any of you. Did the kid who died on his motorcycle at 17, did his life matter? Yeah, we all need to fire up regardless of our age, regardless of our interests, regardless of our titles, regardless of our past. As an author, I love to interview people. My favorite interview is always with an elderly person, elderly meaning someone older than me. And they will always remind us they do not have regrets for things they did do. They only have regrets for things they did not do. Will you? I went to college with an 87-year-old woman. Her name is Rose. It's one of the more famous stories that's been all over the internet. It's my story. We invited her to speak at our football banquet, a sea of testosterone steroid poster children. She's the speaker. And she steps up, and like Gordon mentioned, she's so nervous. She starts to shake. She drops her 3x5 cards. Her speech goes all over the floor. How is she going to respond? I'm sorry, I'm so nervous. I gave up beer for Lent, and this whiskey's killing me. It's not what happens to us. It's what we do with what happens to us that matters. I said to my brother, whoa, how's mom? He said, she's all right. I said, give her a big hug and a kiss for me, will you please? And tell her I'll phone her as quickly as I can. And then he asks me the gajillion-dollar question, what are you going to do? And I've already amended it for you. What are you willing to do that no one else is willing to do that makes us stand out in this crowd? And let me interrupt. As I've traveled the world, do you know what I've discovered? We become the average of the 5 people we associate with the most. If you hang around with 5 broke people, you're going to be broke. You hang around with 5 negative, cancerous, woe me, victim mentality people, there's a good chance you're going to be exactly like them. When you put a hard-to-catch horse in the same field with an easy-to-catch horse, most of the time you end up with 2 hard-to-catch horses. When you put a healthy child in the same room with a sick child, most of the time you end up with 2 sick children. Moral to the story, to be disciplined, healthy, and significant, we need to associate with the disciplined, healthy, and significant. That's why we're at this conference. But what are you going to do when you're alone? What are you going to do when you leave here And yes, you have signed a commitment card. Now, how are you going to follow up to make sure your life matters, but we don't die with our music still in us? My brother says, what are you going to do? I said, well, Mom and Dad have taught us to keep our promises, to keep our commitments. I said, I can't imagine what it would be like to be a 90-minute, to be a meeting planner with a 90-minute slot to fill 3,500 people in the audience and not have the speaker show. I can't leave her hanging. I got to go speak. That's what Dad would want me to do. And then I'm going to keep my commitment the next day. So I'm going to spend the night and I'm going to go speak on Saturday. Then I'm going to hustle home. God knows I need your support and hopefully you can have some of mine. I hung up the phone with my brother and I sat there in my hotel room and I openly wept like a wee child. This is my dad, my legitimate hero, gone, and it's going to happen to all of us. I don't know about you, but that's the most motivational thought I have on a daily basis. We're all going to die. What are you going to do about it now? And I'm not going to die at the base of the mountain. I'm going to die while climbing. Guaranteed. So I hung up the phone with my brother, and I sat there, and I just openly wept. 15 minutes later, the phone rings again. This time, it is my ride. I tell him I'll be right down. I go into the washroom. I splash some water on my face, try to freshen up to the best of my ability. I leave my hotel room, and I get on the elevator. And as the elevator doors start to close, the corner of the bellman's cart nudges its way through the opening, and they, bing, back open. And on the elevator comes this way overzealous psycho bellman. I'll never forget him as long as I live. He's pushing this runaway cart. Woo-hoo! Pushes it onto the elevator, forces me back to the right rear corner of the elevator, and I assume the elevator position. Doors close. We start going down. He is relentless. Whoa! Did you see the beautiful sunshine? He said, I've lived up here in Seattle, Washington. 15 years rained every single day. You must have brought the good weather with you. How you doing? I said, I'm fine. You know, when someone's been staring at you for a while and you don't even have to get eye contact, you can just kind of feel it, just kind of sense it. All of a sudden he says, hey, mister, you're not fine. You've been crying. I said, yeah. I said, I just found out my dad died this morning and I'm really sad. He said, whoa. Elevator comes to the lobby, doors open. He gets off. I get off the elevator. He goes his way. I meet my ride. He drives me downtown to the convention center. I'm introduced and I make my speech. I had to dig deeper than I'd ever dug in my whole entire life to make that speech. But if you remember nothing else I said today, you can if you think you can, not if somebody else thinks you can. I got to the end of my speech and I said to the audience, I'd like to conclude with a little song from one of my albums. And I said, the reason why I want to sing this little song is because my dad died this morning and it's the first time he's ever heard me sing it in public. And again, I dug deeper than I'd ever dug and maybe sang the song better than I'd ever sung it. I concluded my speech and I had the driver take him to the Seattle Aquarium. Am I now a hypocrite? Moments ago, I put on a pedestal our American fighting soldiers who are willing to run towards the sound of the guns. I challenged all of us to stand tall, to stand strong, especially when we're by ourselves. Be that oak tree. When the winds of change and the negativity knocks on the door of the hotel where we're having our meeting, we tactfully and in a classy way, non-confrontationally, because we know we're right and it's not about who's right, it's about what's right. We invite them in. My dad always said, if two people agree on everything, it means one of them isn't necessary. In a board of directors meeting, if everybody thinks the same, it means no one's thinking at all. And Jesus didn't just go to the Jews. He went to the Samaritans. He challenged his apostles after his death to go in and talk to the Romans and talk to the Gentiles and spread the gospel to every nation, kindred, tongue, and people. I challenge you that before you come back next year, you bring someone with you. Because my concern as an outsider is simply this. If we only talk to people who like what we say and agree with everything we've been saying, who nod your heads in agreement, this is a freaking waste of time. And yes, it's important for us to stay fired up. And as a football player, we practiced every day and had a coach. And yeah, we trained and stayed physically fit and emotionally ready and with a tough mindset. So yeah, this is important. I'm not diminishing the fact that it's necessary for us to gather together and strengthen each other. Because when the water in the lake goes up, all the boats rise together. We know that. But what about those who need to know what we know? My first child in the ultrasound, you're going to have a little girl. I'm like, no, I've prayed about it. I know I'm going to have a little guy. And they're pointing out everything on this ultrasound. I said, I don't really care what that says. I'm going to have a little guy. I just know it. And because I travel so much, my wife, as we would conclude our conversation that evening every night, I would say, put the phone on your tummy. I want to talk to my guy. And I nicknamed him Little Bubba, which incidentally is his nickname today, 29 years old. And you know what's so interesting? In our first excursion in the car with the newborn in the car seat, asleep, peacefully looking at him through the rearview mirror, every night when I would talk to my wife and I'd talk to the little baby on her tummy, I would have her play one of my songs, my most famous song called I'll Build You a Rainbow, story about a little boy and his mom dies, families are forever. It's a 6.5 minute song where I talk the verses and sing the choruses, so it never got any radio play. And so I would talk to the unborn on her belly, as crazy as that sounds. And then my wife would always play that little song on the old day tape recorder. So now he's born into the world. He's in the car seat in our first excursion out. He's asleep in the car seat. And I'm so proud as a dad. And I'm driving in the car, big old Suburban. And I'm looking in the rearview mirror. And my wife leans over and puts in the cassette tape of my song, I'll Build You a Rainbow. And my little guy wakes up and starts looking around. About a week later, he's crying. My wife puts in that song and he stops crying and starts looking around. One of my greatest friends on this planet, who's had the single most significant difference in my life as a spiritual advisor, as a great friend, as a business advocate, who created this company that employs hundreds and hundreds of people. His mom got pregnant and she was on her way to get an abortion when she had a serious automobile accident. Because of her medical condition, they couldn't go through with the abortion, and she decides weeks later, as she recovers from the serious crash, that she would go ahead and have the baby, put it up for adoption. And my buddy Mont Beardall has changed the world, one person, one moment at a time. What a tragedy had his life terminated because of some selfish act, saying, I can't handle this, you know, sex is a weekend sport, and I blew it. So I'm at the Seattle Aquarium watching the fish swim, watching the otters float on their backs. They reminded me of some of the offensive linemen I used to play ball with. And that day I coined a phrase that's been a pillar of strength for me in times of tribulation. Pain is a signal to grow, not to suffer. And once we learn the lesson the pain teaches us, the pain goes away. So in life there's no mistakes, only lessons. And having learned that powerful lesson, I had the driver take me back to the Seattle Airport, Marriott Hotel. And here's where you come into my story, and here's where you come into my remarks, and here's where you, and I pray that you'll accept my challenge to do something with what you know, with what you have right now. I walk into my hotel room, and there on the dresser of drawers is a basket of fruit. And it's not your basic basket of fruit that's been delivered from the hotel gift shop. We've all seen these little color cellophane, little bow, little sterile stamp card. They never get our names right. Thanks for staying with us, Ralphie. This was the coolest gift. Excuse me. She's like, say it, don't spray it. I want the news, not the weather. This was the coolest gift I'd ever received. It was a broken, smushed basket. One side was completely caved in. It looked like it was someone's second thought, maybe after hours, no resources available. But they still wanted to make a difference. Can any of you relate? Do what you can with what you have right now. Everybody can step it up. Whoever delivered it apparently walked through the hotel lobby and they looked in the garbage bin. They're like, oh, whoa, that's too good to throw away. Molly Smith will be really proud of us. Do more with less. They took it, they retrieved it, and took it to my room. Apparently, whoever delivered it was into presentation because they turned the broken, smushed part of the basket towards the wall. Whoever delivered it walked past a big fake tree in the lobby, yanked off one of those fine plastic leaves, stuck this rubberized leaf in front of the broken, smushed part of the basket. In my basket of fruit, there was a tomato, big giant carrot, and a handwritten card that said, Mr. Clark, I'm sure sorry your dad died. I'm supposed to get off work at 5:00. I've asked to stay on all night long so that I can be here just for you. Room service closes at 10:00. The kitchen has agreed to stay open all night long so they can be here just for you. If you need anything, just call and ask for me. Signed, James the bellman in the elevator. He's not the only guy who signed my little card. Every single hotel employee that night at the Seattle Airport and Marriott Hotel signed my little card. I still have it matted and framed, hanging on my office wall to this day. Let me debrief and conclude. Here we have the youngest paid, the lowest paid person in the entire employee payroll who seemingly gets it. Guess what? Money's not a motivator. Here we have the youngest person in the entire employee payroll who seemingly gets it. Guess what? Age has nothing to do with living a life of significance. It's making a difference when we can, and every moment matters. And because my challenge for you to return to the next conference with someone who does not actually believe what we believe, and we can educate them and coach them and get them on our side and convert them to our understanding. What this young man reminds us about is loyalty is the key to sales. The definition of sales is the transference of trust, and we're in the sales business. We're trying to get those who believe what they believe to believe what we believe, because it's right, not who's right, but what's right. Loyalty. Every single time I speak, I'm always relegated to stay at the property where they have the meeting. And this is a nice hotel. I appreciate your hospitality. Towels in my room are so fluffy, I'm having a hard time getting my suitcase closed. Are you finding that? But every single time I speak in Seattle, Washington, I always stay at the Seattle Airport and Marriott Hotel, even if I have to rent a car at my own expense and drive an hour and a half out of my own way. Pay tribute to this brand and this young man who gets it. Bottom line, I haven't taught you one thing. Plato taught all knowledge is recollection. So when I stand in front of an audience and you nod your heads in agreement, I'm not teaching you anything new. You're recalling something that you already learned in a previous experience. I just reminded us about what we need to do when we leave here. And again, I call you to action. Little money and some resources of time and talent to make this cause as strong as it can be. Only you know how high your bar should be, and only you know if you're pushing yourself to your ultimate capacity and potential as a human being. So the 30-second vignette that ties the bow around our time together, it's about support. I'm here for you, you're here for me, and when the water and lake goes up, all the boats rise together. Story. Mother encourages her daughter to come home as soon as school is over. Time comes, time goes. 30 minutes later, her daughter walks in through the front door of her home, and her mother scolds her. Where have you been? I've been worried sick. She says, oh, mommy. I walked my friend Sally home. She dropped her doll on the sidewalk. I broke all the pieces. It was awful. Her mother said, so you're late because you stayed to help your friend pick up the pieces of the doll and put it back together again? She said, oh, no, mommy. I didn't know how to fix the doll. I just stayed to help her cry. We got to be there for each other, not just in tears of sadness, not just in times of controversy, but to celebrate the joys and the victories of this cause. Cleveland's Right to Life matters. It's one of the great organizations that I've ever had an opportunity to be exposed to. And it's more than just that title and the cause. It boils itself down to the significance of each of you, knowing that we're only the strongest as the weakest in the room. God bless you. Thanks for allowing me to watch the videos and become more educated than ever before on this movement, this cause, this right to life, knowing that it really is a choice to obey, a choice to walk on higher ground, a choice to be everything that we're supposed to be, everything we were born to be, everything God needs us to be, realizing that we really are the hands of Jesus. May we rise to the occasion, especially myself. God bless you, God bless our troops, God bless America, and you have a great conference.
You have been listening to Dan Clark, the master motivator and contributing author to Chicken Soup for the Soul series, and president and CEO of Clark Success.